What did the fox say? What color was that dress? How random were flash mobs and hipsters and the rest? It's Quirky Relatables with Tara and Lane. Quirky Relatables with Tara and Lane. It's the Quirky Relatables podcast. You're listening to The Quirky Relatables,
a not quite retro podcast looking back at the 2010s.
I'm your host, Tara Ace. My pronouns are they, she, and I am a screenwriter and burlesque performer who came of age during this time.
And I'm Lane. My pronouns are they, he, and I'm an elder millennial who is waxing nostalgic about a decade that was, well, basically a blur to me.
Welcome to season one, episode one of the Quirky Relatables.
Welcome.
I can't believe this is happening. If you hear any noises in my house, I apologize in advance. I will do what I can to edit them out, but life happens. And if you hear a door shut, just, you know, pretend like you're sitting here in the room with us.
A dog, a doorbell, a bird, any of them, all those things. It's probably coming from our recording.
It's just here to remind you that you're alive and you're living in a world where there are sounds. And that's it. Okay, so this is an exciting time. I'm very excited to start this podcast. And to everyone that's thinking, wait, it is way too soon to do a retrospective podcast of the 2010s, I assure you, I hear you, okay? I understand your concerns. I understand if you feel like this decade literally just happened yesterday. It's too early. I know that the aughts are having a moment, and I love that. But trust me, it's time.
And I've said all of that. I've said all of that before.
Yeah. I'm just repeating all the things that Lane has said to me as I have tried to convince them to do this podcast with me, and it worked.
It did.
So I have a question for you, Lane.
Yes.
Okay. In regards to the 2010s, where did you start this decade? And where did you end this decade?
Oh, geez. So I started the decade. So 2010, I graduated college. I was living in Philadelphia, just graduated undergrad at an art school. And I could not find work because it was during the height of the recession. And I was also identifying as a gay lady. The end of the decade, I was living in Orlando, and I still live in Orlando, Florida, and I was working at an ad agency as a senior copywriter, and I am not a gay lady, but rather a queer trans mask person. So a little bit different there for the beginning of the decade and the end of the decade.
So lots of personal growth. And of the many people who graduated in 2010 after an economic recession, you did it. You found your job. You got your career.
I did. I know. It was a struggle. I was still doing a lot of freelancing and like one-offs, and job would be here and then I would lose something. And it was a struggle in the beginning of the decade. And in fact, I couldn't find a job for a good chunk of a year, and I decided to go to grad school, and I'm an MBA dropout, and I'm still paying on those grad school loans.
Just cancel all student loans. Get rid of them.
Yes.
You don't even need them.
Agreed.
Well, okay. So I started this decade as a straight cis teen holy roller in a Pentecostal church that was basically a cult. And then I ended this decade a non-binary queer screenwriter and burlesque performer who mostly uses astrology as a spiritual practice now. So I guess I'm a gay witch. And I use all of my experiences growing up in a very closeted and restricted, wild church where I've literally seen what they were telling me were exorcisms happening. Like, you haven't lived unless you have seen a 6-year-old start speaking in tongues.
Like, you haven't lived until you've seen an exorcism, let me tell you.
Really haven't. My first exorcism, I was 10 years old. I'll tell you all about it sometime.
Oh, this is your first exorcism? Oh, I've already been to 3 of them.
Just stick around long enough. You'll at least see at least 3 of them per Sunday. But yeah, so I use all of that and I channel those experiences to write horror and things that matter to me, like reclaiming the manic pixie dream girl. I think she deserves better and I'm going to give it to her. And also I seek to liberate people and help them feel good living in their bodies and their senses, because after all of the very restrictive stuff that I had previously mentioned, I just want to be free. And this decade, the 2010s, is a massive part of how I personally found my freedom. And I'm you too. We both started this decade in completely different.
Yeah.
I thought I was straight and cis.
I thought I was gay and a lady. Although I knew I was trans since I was 2 years old, but that's a different podcast for a different time.
Or it's just a different story for a different episode of this podcast. Sure. We'll get there. So, okay. I've been thinking about why this podcast. What is the why for this podcast? And I recently saw a post on social media that said the 80s, the 90s, and the aughts all had very different stylized, distinct things in culture that made them easily recognizable from each other, but that these past 12 years, meaning all of the 2010s and now even into the 2020s, have felt like one big conglomerate of the same thing over and over and over again, to the point where time is no longer discernible. And I saw this post, and that's when I knew immediately we needed to do this podcast, because it's imperative that we assess the 2010s, because we're officially 2 years out of the 2010s and we're still stuck on the aughts. And I mean, I love the aughts with my heart and soul. And I feel like you are one of the people that is in my mind, a spokesperson of the aughts and the 90s.
And the 90s. Yes. That's when you know, you were bringing up this idea of this podcast, and like the intro says, like, this is the first time I'm really waxing nostalgic about this. It wasn't a decade that was really close to me, as it was to you, you know, the aughts and the 90s was for me. But now that I'm looking back and I'm like, wow, there's some good shit in this decade.
There is some good shit.
And you can really, you know, there are a lot of things from the early from the early teens to the late that are stylistically different. But I understand that, you know, the post that you said, it seems like one big amorphous blob of an era.
I love that you just called them teens, because as I was looking around on the internet trying to find anything that was a marker of this time, people are so confused. No one knows what to call it. I like to call it the 2010s, but it's a bit of a mouthful. But people call it the teens. But I was seeing people trying to call it the ones and various things that made absolutely no sense to me.
I don't like the ones. And
I hate the ones. Is that? But I feel like the general confusion surrounding the time period of this decade has to do with a lot of what makes this decade really special, in my opinion, because the 2010s is, I mean, inundated with culture. It is oversaturated. There is way too much culture happening all the time at every moment. And I think that's part of what makes it hard to find any discernible trait as a widespread of a 10-year gap or 10-year period. But there's just so much to talk about.
I think a lot of it has to do, too, is that this is the first decade where we're getting media thrown at us in so many different directions. And of course, you know, the 90s, that was the era that brought us the internet to the masses. the aughts, that's when internet became more accessible to everyone. And that's when the, you know, the birth of the first smartphone, 2007, with the iPhone release. And then previously to that, BlackBerry, RIP BlackBerry. But this decade, the teens or the tens or the ones, I'm not going to say the ones, but I this is where it's where we're completely inundated with information. It is information overload from the beginnings of social media that were a carryover from the aughts. So, I mean, MySpace wasn't a thing in this decade, but from that early Facebook onward to really the birth of Instagram and the idea of an influencer, that this is all this decade.
Yes. But the thing is, so, okay, social media was a thing in the aughts as far as MySpace and early Facebook went. But what makes the 2010 so important and pivotal in understanding where we're at now and why culture is not discernible anymore is because social media, in my opinion, it went from a personal space to connect with your friends and family in your kind of personal bubble. You know, you're sharing photos of your daily life, and Instagram was just an app to share pictures of your food. That's all it was. And thus the birth of the hipster and the foodie came out with it.
Weird filters.
Right. With terrible Helvetica, was it?
That's a font. Yeah. Like,
that's the font.
Sepia like tones. And there's just weird.
So there was like five filters, and it was just, you could only do a 4x5 tiny little box photo. And that was all it was. And that's what it was used for. But now it has taken a life of its own. And social media is now a complete online world that creates its own culture and deads its own culture immediately after it creates it. So what we're seeing is a lot more freedom to play and a greater diversity of subcultures and countercultures. But that means that there's just so much happening all of the time. And it's incredible. Yeah, the idea of the influencer coming out and how established being an influencer is now. And that is all social media. That is all the 2010s that happened here. And that has been a huge part in why we can't really follow any set trend.
Yeah. And I've worked in advertising for predominantly most of my career. And at the beginning of this decade, that's when I said when I graduated college, there weren't social media departments at agencies there, or if they were, there was just one person that knew how to post something on Facebook. It wasn't as well curated as it is now.
Literally just one post with a little caption.
Yeah.
You couldn't even tag people.
No.
Then now there are reels on Instagram. You can make entire movies on Instagram. It's insane how much you can do. But it's also insane how much it has become a source of media for people. Social media has now merged into a media aspect, which is where all of the fake news and all of these scary things start happening, because it has become a media source. And there's a difference between social media and actual media.
Well, I think of, you know, we're talking about fake news, and this, there's always been fake news. You can just go on the grocery store and see those old magazines that were like Bat Boy found in cave, News of the World, you know, like those things like that. But this decade was when there are platforms for folks that can basically say whatever they want to say. And I am definitely pro freedom of speech within reason. It's just, this decade was the decade where everybody had a platform. So it wasn't, so even though that we're past two decades of widespread internet usage, we're at this point, everybody has a podium. Everybody has a platform. Everybody has, you know, this was the decade that really brought us what we're doing now, a podcast, where folks that back in the day, you would need to have a radio show or know someone to get a podcast. Now it's like anybody can do it. And that's what's great about what came out of this past decade.
I love that you say the word platform, because that is absolutely true. Social media went from sharing to a platform. And this idea that if you are a person who has an account on any social media app or website, you have a platform. It doesn't matter if you have 300 followers, you have a platform now. That is insane to me. That level of growth and how fast everything happened in such a short amount of time and where we're at with that now. And I mean, there was a lot of other social, not media in a sense, but I guess would Vine be considered social media?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you're a Vine. I don't even know if they're called them Viners or folks that are into Vine. Vine users. I never even really got into Vine, but I guess I would say, yeah, it would be a social media because you're sharing it and it's a platform. And
yeah. And so there's so many things that happened, like that were coming out and many websites. Everyone was making a website. Everything was getting quirky. Everything was getting its own like little heyday, but there was a lot of things. So Tumblr was really huge, and then Tumblr got sold to Yahoo or something. And it died. It's still around. You can still use it. But the freedom of Tumblr is now gone. But Vine was, yes, I'm a Viner. I was not a Viner in a sense that I made Vine videos. I was way too insecure for that. But I loved Vine so much. And I still quote them. They live in my brain on a loop.
All those vines live rent-free in your brain, which was a phrase that was
exactly
popularized in this.
Yes. I love, there was a joke going around that was like, what the heck is a rent-free thought? Do your thoughts pay rent? What thoughts are paying rent? So there's just so much to talk about. But what I really want to say and what I want to focus on is there is an oversaturation of culture. There is a huge feeling that time is not discernible through trends and culture. But I disagree with that. Wholeheartedly, I disagree with that, because the identifiable traits are there. Hello, Peter Pan collars and sailor shorts. And then later in the 2015 era, I guess it's an era, but in 2015 to 2018, 19, bomber jackets with the thick brow and the really overdrawn lip, skater flare skirts and the hipster mustaches, beanies, and that go like rolled up over your ears.
Well, we were talking earlier in that decade too, were jegging. So jeans that are actually not jeans at all, but that are basically tight sweatpants.
Right. I love jeggings. I'm so for jeggings. When jeggings came out, that was a reset for everybody. That brought us into the future.
Jeans of the future that have no ass pockets.
See, the thing, so fashion-wise, I think we have very clear identifiable traits that we can mark through the decade. It's just that they happen at a larger rate. And the thing, too, about the 2010s, and another reason why I think we're oversaturated with culture, we keep saying that phrase, but I think it just fits. But, okay, during this time, there was a huge increase in reality TV popularity, launching people into superstardom. So in the early 2010s, we have things like Jersey Shore happening. And all of a sudden, people are not getting their fashion advice from Vogue magazine and, you know, the latest runway. They're getting fashion advice from Snooki, and everyone is running out to buy Bumpets. And then party rock shirts and the sunglasses,
shutter
and the
shades,
lines.
Shutter
shades. Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
You mentioned Snooki. So it was a few weeks ago on my Facebook memories, and Facebook memories are, that's your time capsule right there into the late aughts and into the teens. It was a photo from 10 years ago that I saw a Snooki Christmas ornament. And I was like,
what?
And it was like $2 and I didn't buy it. I just was, I made a joke of it. It's like, who wants to have Snooki on your Christmas tree or Hanukkah bush? Right. And I'm like, now I'm like, man, I wish I bought that thing. And then I looked up on eBay, it was like $60. I'm like, wow, this little nugget from this pop culture nugget that I was just, I just laughed it off 10 years ago. Now people are embracing that. They want the Snooki ornament, apparently.
I would love the Snooki ornament. I have this memory of my friends and I, we love Jersey Shore, and we would just go hang out at Target or Marshall's or Ross, whatever place was nearby the campus, and we would go run out. And I remember there being giant framed posters of the Jersey Shore being sold, and we just took pictures holding them. I don't know why we did, but it was a thing to just bring your camera and a digital, giant digital camera, DSLR everywhere with you, and take pictures of doing absolutely random things. That's, I just said random. That brings me
That's so random.
Random as a word, awkward. That is such a huge thing about this time. Everything is random. Everything is awkward. Everything is quirky, which actually brings us to a question. I mean, what is a quirky relatable? Well, I'm very glad that you asked myself asking myself this.
Yeah,
I have an answer. And I had to explain this to you when I was pitching this podcast.
You did, because when you pitched this, the name of it, right? I mean, I saw the message as like 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was just like, ah, I don't know about that one. I really didn't give it any thought. And then you really pitched the idea very well, and I was on board. And now I know, and you're going to explain what a quirky relatable is.
Yes, absolutely. Because it must be known. Okay. A quirky relatable is a character whose quirks serve to make them more relatable to an everyday person. So these quirks can cause embarrassments or chaos in the world around them and in their lives, but ultimately they endear them to the audience, who can laugh at the situation and say like, same. And you know quirky relatables. You might love them, you might loathe them, but you know them. They are almost every single character on New Girl. They are the show Girls. They are Broad City. They are Parks and Recs. And I mean, it defines so much of the humor in the 2010s. This obsession with awkwardness as a badge of honor, as a way to express yourself as unique in the world. I mean, when we started going through all of the different things that we could start pulling out about this decade, you were bringing up What Does the Fox Say? And we were talking about My Life is Average, Text from Last Night, I Must Ask You a Question. All of these things are so quirky. And I feel like that's a really defining trait. It's changed a bit as we go from the early 2010s. It's really clear. And then it changes because people start counterculturing against it. But it's still there. It's still here. And shows like Black-ish use that humor. Like I said, Broad City uses this humor. And it's one of my favorite things. I love the quirky relatables. I love them. I know some people hate them and cringe at them, but I think that cringe should be embraced.
Well, it's like a show that one of my favorite shows of this decade that then you never even watched it is Portlandia. And although Portlandia was pretty much making fun of that hipster Portland culture, but the show itself was a quirky show.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it was making fun, it was like poking fun of that culture, the show itself was quirky.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's what's so funny to me, is that even the people who are, you know, counterculturing or laughing or making fun of the quirky things or the quirky people in the 2010s, they're still acting within that frame, because it just defines so much of the culture, the humor, the identity markers, the phrases, everything of this time. And that's why I was like, okay, this podcast name has to be the Quirky Relatables in a self-aware aspect, because I understand that the cringe aspect is there. I get that there was a huge backlash against the hipsters, but I like to embrace the things about this time that people cringe at, because I think it's worthy of being embraced.
Embrace the cringe.
Embrace the cringe. Stop thinking that you're cooler than being cringy. You know what I mean? That's what bothers me. No one is cool. Nobody is cool. So just do what you like. And that is also another thing, the rise of nerd culture.
Yes.
And how nerds became cool, and how Hot Topic went from goth to nerd quirky overnight.
Oh, it was completely overnight. So during this time, I've worked in advertising, and also this decade, I was a celebrity client rep at Comic-Cons. And this is the decade that really brought Comic-Cons to the forefront of everything. I mean, everybody knows about San Diego Comic-Con. That's the number one. But we're talking about, I would be at Comic-Cons in places like Biloxi, Toledo, like really small, you know, small markets. But that's the thing. Nerd culture was such a big part of this decade, and it was in the public eye, and it was cool to be a nerd. Whether love it or hate it, it was one of the most popular shows in the 2010s. Was Big Bang Theory. I know.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to even think that. It was one of the most popular, most watched shows of that decade. But it showed like nerds are cool. Or thinking of Doctor Who, bow ties are cool. And everybody had their certain, this is also the decade that really Marvel became huge, like tons of Marvel movies and DC movies. And it was okay to be into that stuff that in previous decades, I'll quote from The Breakfast Club, a neo-maxi Zoom dweeby. Like someone would make fun of you if you're into that, but it was cool to say like, yeah, I'm into Doctor Who, or I'm obsessed with Star Wars. Well, Star Wars, of course, the new era of Star Wars in this decade as well. It was cool to say that they were into those things.
Mm-hmm. So one of the, in my mind, who's a pivotal figure in this time is Childish Gambino, Donald Glover. The show Community is exactly everything I'm talking about. It was one of my favorite shows at this time. And Donald Glover was a true Renaissance man. I mean, everything that you can do in any kind of artistic aspect, I feel like he went and did it and conquered it and did it to perfection. And he had said, being nerdy just means liking things that takes effort to like. And that became cool. And I think that is cool. And I said that no one is cool. I do live by that. But I think because what I think is cool is doing what feels fun and right and exciting to you, no matter where that is positioned in a social hierarchy. If you're doing something that feels good to you, that's cool.
And there's always been community for folks who are into quote unquote nerdy things, but it was just amplified more so in this decade.
I wasn't around in the 80s, but from what I've heard about D&D in the 80s, it's always depicted as just a bunch of dudes huddled around a giant pizza in their mom's basement. Yes. Like,
yeah, that's the stereotype of it.
But D&D became more popular and all of these things. But I think Hot Topic is really to blame for that.
Just blame Hot Topic.
I'll blame Hot Topic, which is insane because I started the decade a Pentecostal holy roller. And I was not even allowed to make eye contact with a Hot Topic.
You weren't allowed to make eye contact with.
Oh my God, no. If we were at the mall walking past a Hot Topic, it was like the devil himself is about to come out of the earth and drag you into the pits of that Hot Topic.
I'm just picturing that Hot Topic is like, say it's like Santa at the, like a mall Santa, but it's like a devil at the Hot Topic. That's what I picture that that's what your folks are saying. Like, you can't go in there. It's like the devil on a throne.
Yes. Literally, my pastor would preach about Hot Topic and how when he walked past, he could feel the demons and the energy of hell. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can never go inside a Hot Topic ever.
Wow.
Right. So Hot Topic went from 90s goth to millennial, late 2000s scene kid emo, and then to nerd trendy. But the switch to nerd trendy was so stark and so different. It seemed like it happened overnight. So color my former pastor completely embarrassed. Out here preaching that God's going to smite you for a Funko Pop. Sir. Okay. So I found a post. I went on Reddit. r/notlikeothergirls, and I found a post that I think defines the Facebook humor and the copypasta kind of I'm so unique and quirky energy. And it says, I will probably be that girl who shows up late to her wedding, and I will run in screaming, I'm sorry, I was getting chicken nuggets. That's it. That perfectly defines it.
I have never heard that before. Well, that was like
she's so quirky.
Well, that was the thing. I think it was Jennifer Lawrence after the Oscar.
Oh my God, Jennifer Lawrence.
I think it was Jennifer Lawrence after her Oscar win. And I'm pulling this out of like of my ass pretty much, but I think this did happen. That she went to In-N-Out Burger and it was like a big deal of eating In-N-Out in her dress.
But no, that was a huge thing because Jennifer Lawrence, also a quirky relatable, she always talked about eating food. She always talked specifically about French fries and all of these different things. She was always very awkward and just was like blah, saying all these things and word vomiting everywhere. She is the quintessential quirky celebrity at this time who was one of the icons in the early 2010s. And I love that you brought that up. That's so 100% spot on. But that's everything. And, you know, I think about the 2010s in that aspect. And oh my God, do you remember the copy pastas are still around, but specifically what I love is the "and everyone clapped" stories.
And everyone clapped. I know I made one up the other day about my story was I noticed that there were a lot of grocery carts in the parking lot. So I decided to pick up all the grocery carts myself. And instead of just putting them in the cart corral, I decided to bring them back into the grocery store. And then when I brought them back into the grocery store, everybody clapped because they were like, wow. But that's how ridiculous those stories were.
Yeah, but that's such a good example. But I also think that's a really good example for the My Life is Average website. Do you remember My Life is Average?
No, I do not.
Oh my God. Okay, so did you ever know F My Life?
Yes, I've heard of that, but I've never heard of like My Life is Average, no.
Okay, of course you did, you nihilistic 90s kid.
I know, I know.
So like F My Life was a website, but then the response, and people would just post things that were like bad about their day or whatever. And then the response to that was My Life is Average, which I loved. And it was always just be really average things. So I went to the grocery store and instead of putting my shopping cart in the shopping corral, I actually brought it back into the store where it was supposed to go. My life is average. like that was always the format. Yeah. It was always a very formulaic thing and it was very easily repeatable. And that was a huge thing. It actually was a little bit before because it started in 2009, but it carried into the 2010s. And I think that counts. But yeah, so and everyone clap stories crack me up because that was a lot of Tumblr. And I recently saw a tweet that had the worst burn I've ever seen in my life. Was someone, I don't even remember the story, but someone wrote this thing that happened to them and a response to it. And it was a very outlandish thing. It was something that was like, okay, this doesn't seem real. But someone responded, and the comment was, did everyone clap?
But it really happened.
And everyone clapped.
It really happened, guys.
So, okay, but to just bullet point this. So we are two people who experienced the 2010s with a 4-year age gap in totally different ways. For me, it was a coming of age story into from my teenhood into my adulthood. And for you, it was from your college years into your adulthood. So adulthood in different ways into your career. And we started the decade and we ended the decade in very different places. And there's so much to talk about. There's so much that we've personally experienced, but also things that were important to this time, like the big rainbow wave that was happening of all of the inclusive laws that were happening, marriage equality, and a lot has changed in such a short amount of time, almost to the point where it's not getting the credit that it properly deserves. And I want to take this time period and take each moment and maximize it, like make it huge so that we can dissect the littlest minute details so that we can give them to people. Because at this point in life, I mean, 2020 has absolutely wrecked my relationship to time in any sort of material way.
That's for everybody. And pretty much for everybody.
Right, right. Right. It really has, being in lockdown and all these different things. I think our association with time is now completely different. But I think that having a association to a specific time and place is really important, because it gives us a way to connect to what is happening right here and right now in a deeper sense. And that's what I want to do. And that's why I want to talk about the 2010s, because they're important to me. And also because radio stations keep playing songs over and over. That's always like from the hits of the past and today's hits.
Okay, so
and it's like 2010 Katy Perry Teenage Dream. That's no longer a today's hit.
They've been doing that forever though. So even in like growing up in the 90s, it would be like 70s, 80s. And today, or like 90s and today. I was like, what? And today is like the span. I think there is a meme where it shows like 70s, 80s, 90s, and today. And it's like a 20 year span.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. So the more that we can have very clear boundaries around decades, as I said, it's a good thing, because having a sense of time situates you more deeply in the present. And that's what we're going to do. And everyone clapped.
And everyone clapped. It's the end of the episode. This is where everybody claps.
This has been the Quirky Relatables podcast, a Honey Twat production.